I'm a great believer in thinking for oneself. But I do recognize that a lot of what we think is all made up. So today I want to talk about my assumptions about living to be 120 and healthy. I've got opinions, I've got beliefs, I've got, I don't know, superstitions probably. I have some ideas about the living to be 120 and healthy, and that's what I want to talk about. Because I have so many of these, I think this is going to be a multiple talk kind of topic. I think everybody, first of all, has got to determine for themselves the purpose of life. Make it up. Got to decide on what your purpose of life is. And why are you even alive? Not what you're doing in life, but really, why are you alive? For me, I assume that the purpose of life is to grow our consciousness, to develop our awareness, which is the same thing, consciousness and awareness. So if we're growing this, if we're becoming more and more conscious of and aware of the realities in life, it makes sense to me that that's what we would be doing. We're not trying to be less aware. We're not trying to be more ignorant. We're trying to be less ignorant. It seems to me, just using myself as a model, that growing our consciousness takes time and it takes practice. For some people, maybe they're going to be complete with their life at 60 or 70 or 80 years old. For me personally, I don't think that's enough time. Growing the consciousness takes time and practice, and maybe I'm slow, so I want more time. And I do believe that we make our own decision about how long we live, the quality of our lives, and how we die and when we die. If you can imagine, that is a situation that is creative by the way we think and feel. That really puts a tremendous amount of control and responsibility into our own hands. And I believe that to be true. I assume it is true. I certainly have noticed this tendency in my own life, is this idea of, I want to be happy, and I'm going to try X and Y and Z and A and B and C and D and E, and over again, I'll be trying things. Maybe the same thing multiple times. But this seems to be a way we do things. We try everything we can, whatever occurs to us, whatever we're told about, whatever is marketed to us, to be happy. Oh, if you do this, you'll be happy. If you take this, you'll be happy. If you don't do that, you'll be happy, and so on. Consequently, we need to try all sorts of things in order to find happiness. And the main point of that process is, well, that didn't work. Nope, that didn't work. Nope, that didn't work. And so we discover through trial and error what works for us and what doesn't work for us. That doesn't make us bad people. It just makes us people. So if we recognize that that's part of the process of living, is try this, try that, discover this, discover that, touch this, taste that, and so on, we're going to recognize that what produces this deeper sense of connection and satisfaction and helps us to grow and develop our consciousness. This idea of living to be 120 and healthy, for me, sounds like a Mount Everest kind of goal. It's like, oh, I want to climb Mount Everest. I personally don't want to climb Mount Everest. Doesn't have any appeal to me. But I do want to climb this mountain of time in order to achieve, because I recognize as I climb this mountain of time, the goal is not just time, it is consciousness. I become more aware, more aware, more aware. And if you can imagine elevating yourself to different altitudes, you go, oh, I can, at ground level, I can see a certain amount. And when I'm a little bit higher than ground level, my view is a little bit more expansive. And when I'm higher than that, my view is even more expansive still. And this idea that we're not just visually improving our view, but our consciousness, that is, our realities and the way we interpret life, the way we process information in life, is going to be better, clearer, deeper, and truer. Whenever we have a challenge, it causes us to reach out, to stretch, to try. And as we start to do that, it means that we're going to grow. If you and I were to go to a gym and say, oh, I want to develop my strength in my arms, we would look for appropriate level weights in order to challenge the muscles in our bodies. And as we picked up those weights and we did curls or tricep presses or some other form of exercise, that the muscles in the body would seek greater blood flow, greater energy, in order to meet the demand that we just provided to it. So challenges or demands make us stronger. Or depending on how we look at them, of course, we can look at them and go, oh, poor me, and of course that weakens us and we're going to go into flight as compared to embrace this challenge as a strengthening process, as an enhancement process, as an expansion process. We're going to sabotage that if we view it as overwhelming. If you look at sporting events, if you look at all kinds of different human activities, you could see that people literally put these challenges in front of them deliberately in an effort to see how they do with regard to that challenge. So, like, what are we capable of? We don't actually know. We don't actually know. If you turn around and said to somebody, oh, I want to live to be 120 and healthy, and they go, some people have come back to me and said, you know what, 120, that's what we're supposed to be living to, if not more. Yeah, that's, I'm totally with that. That really is the right number. Other people go, oh, no way. I've already decided I just want to live to be 90 or some other number. Or they just like, nope, not even possible. Because the images that they've created, that they have attached to this idea of 120, if they've ever thought of it at all, is debilitation and all kinds of weaknesses and dependency and loss of mentality and so on. I don't think it has to be that way. So the purpose for me of living to be 120 and healthy includes having time to find out how creative we actually are. I notice in an exercise class that I'm involved in, we practice various punches and kicks and elbows to a heavy bag. And I recognize that during this class, I'm not the most advanced person, having done this for, yesterday was the 42nd class that I've attended, is we take up a position and we strike the bag in a variety of hits. And then before I have really acclimated myself to it, before it becomes automatic, the instructor will have us move to something else. And I thought, oh, wow, I need more time in that process, in that moment, to be able to acclimatize myself to this particular series of punches and kicks and elbows. It's like, oh, I need more time to do that. So it becomes part of me. It's kind of like a dance step. It feels like every time we change those series, it's like, oh, this is a new dance step. Let me see if I can figure this out. And obviously, I'm learning, I'm growing. And it's exciting to recognize this. Because I believe that one of the purposes of living to be 120 and healthy, and actually one of the means to grow to be 120 and healthy, is a focus on growing. A focus on growing is a focus on living. If you look at a plant that's growing, you'd go, that thing is alive. If it's not growing, you'd go, it's either dormant or it's dying or it's dead. I think it makes sense for you and me to focus on growing and living. And so we'll focus on living as we're thinking, I want to live to be 120 and healthy, or I want to live to be, fill in the blank with whatever number is appropriate for you, whatever you can relate to, and be willing to upgrade it at a later date, and healthy. So I want to live to be some number and healthy. And that focus on living is now going to attract into us the awareness that will support us on that journey. I think that's what the purposes of living to be 120 and healthy are. And those are my assumptions about it. The good news is I expect that series of assumptions of the purposes to continually increase. You know why? Because my awareness is going to increase. What about this? And what about that? And what about this? And then I will add those as purposes. It's like, that's cool. The goal of my website, livetobe120andhealthy.com, is to have this conversation. Do I have the answers? No. You know why? Because I haven't lived to be 120 and healthy in this lifetime. Do I want to? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And do people know more than I do about certain things? Absolutely. And I'm looking to engage people in a conversation, people who are going, you know what? I don't accept the medical model. I don't accept the statistics that say you have to die at this age, or men typically die at this age and women die at that age. I don't need that. I don't need that. That's like following somebody else's rule. And I don't think that's the way to go. Now, the way I look at things to make it easier for myself and maybe others is to divide human activity into a structure that I call the 12 worlds. I could call them 12 areas of life. Because it has seemed to me that when I examine my own behaviors and behaviors of other people, that those behaviors can fit into one or more of these areas or worlds at any one time. Everything we do can fit into one or more of these worlds. One of the things that makes it kind of appealing to look at it this way is that when you do a certain behavior and you notice, it's like, gee, that was really rewarding. I feel good about that. I accomplished something significant. That you will notice that that activity could fit into two or three or four or even more worlds. And you go, oh, I'm really impacting a lot of things in my life when I undertake this single activity. I think that's cool. So the first world that I look at, and it makes it easier to remember if you think of it kind of like a structure, a sequence from top to bottom. So right now I have my hand over my head, and that represents to me this idea of spiritual. This is the spiritual world. The next is going to be the mental world, in which, you know, I'd have my hands on my head. But let's go back to the spiritual world. My assumption is, from my studies and everything that I've read and everything that I've been involved in metaphysically and spiritually, is that we have more than one life. We have more than one life, just like we have more than one age. We have more than one developmental stage in life. It's like going to school and, like, how many grades do you have? Only one. No, we don't. No, we progress from preschool to kindergarten to first, second, third, and so on. And we continue growing educationally as much as we're inclined to do. Some people drop out of high school after the ninth grade. Some graduate high school. Some do college and advanced degrees and so on. That's an individual decision. So I believe that we have more than one life. In fact, a lot of people do. More people believe in multiple lives on planet Earth than those people who believe in a single life. You're conceived, you're born, you die, and you're judged by God, and you go to heaven or hell. Fewer people believe that model than the multiple life model. Spiritually, we need to grow in our understanding of this creative power. Now, in English, typically we refer to that power as God. In Spanish, as Dios. If I were in a Muslim, I would refer to it as Allah. But whatever name you call that, Native Americans, maybe the Great Spirit or the Supreme Being or Infinite Intelligence or Divine or Universal Consciousness, there are a lot of different ways to think about this. But the goal is to think about it, to think about and try to understand this creative power. I assume that that's the purpose of growing our awareness. And the way I look at it is this power is, how about supreme awareness? It is the ultimate in terms of consciousness. It is this ocean of consciousness. So my assumption is I'm in this consciousness. I am in the ocean. I'm a point of consciousness in this ocean of consciousness. So what does that mean? It means I'm aware of me, and I can tell the difference between me and the computer I'm looking at, or the telephone I'm talking in, or the pen or pad or the painting on the wall in front of me. I can distinguish between me and each one of those items. Each one of those items is an expression of consciousness shaped in some form, oftentimes by human beings. God didn't invent this computer. Men did. This pen off the side of my desk wasn't invented by God. It was invented by men. But when you think about the air and the flowers growing and the sun and the moon and the sky and so on, and ideally the food we eat, it's like, that's a creation out of divine consciousness. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. As compared to, that thing just came out of a factory manufactured by an affiliate of Monsanto. That I wouldn't put into your body if I were you. We can grow in our understanding of this creative power. Just like we should know more today than we did yesterday. We need to be more aware today than we are yesterday. I have plants and trees growing on my property. I have a pineapple growing in my courtyard. I was talking to that little baby a little while ago. It's about 4 inches high. I had a pineapple maybe last summer, cut off the top, let it dry for a couple of days, then put it into soil, and it's growing now. It's going to turn into a full-grown pineapple sometime this summer. It's impressive. I've got an avocado tree and a lemon tree. These things continually grow. They are bigger today than they were yesterday. Maybe in some cases noticeably so, and maybe in other cases just marginally so. But we know that they are growing. Now, why wouldn't we grow our understanding of this creative power that has made the earth, you and me, the suns, the moons, everything, the universe? Why wouldn't we? To think that I'm only going to know what they knew 2,500 years ago or 3,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago is like, that's like using a road map that was of the earth a couple of millennia ago. It's like, wow, that's going to be difficult to navigate using that, isn't it? Because we didn't know enough about the earth back then. Just like we didn't know enough about a lot of things back then. So some people go, I'm not sure I'm allowed to do that. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. My assumption is we need to grow our understanding of this creative power. It's our right and it's our responsibility. If you say, well, if I've got to deal with what the purpose of my life is, I would say, yeah, and by the way, why don't you deal with what you believe to be the source of your life, the source of your being? What is it that keeps you alive? And it's not the food you ate earlier today or you're going to eat later today. What it keeps you alive? What keeps the cells in your body multiplying? What causes your lungs to contract and expand and your body to be able to use the air that you inhale? And what causes your body to exhale carbon dioxide? What intelligence is that? I think and assume that we exist because we have a source of our being. I capitalize that word, source. And, again, we can call it God, we can call it divine consciousness, we can call it anything you want, as long as we recognize that it exists, and we exist because it exists. I assume, looking around at plants, I walked out in my courtyard earlier, as I told you, to admire the pineapple growing, but I admired the hibiscus, too. Beautiful, pinkish, orangey, reddish flowers. But first thing in the morning, they were curled up. Guess what they are now? They're fully opened, expressing themselves in the warmth and sunshine of Florida. Beautiful, beautiful. And you go, wow. When you look at all of this stuff, you go, I assume that this source is creative. Just look around all the things that exist in creation, all the things that are alive. You go, wow, this power is creative. I assume it is loving, because the way our needs can be met if we allow it. And how we grow, how we're nurtured and nourished, what I ate today and drank today, coffee and cottage cheese and milk, came out of the dirt, not designed by men, but designed by this creative, loving, intelligent power. And to be able to look at the intelligence that's built into just the operation of a single cell animal or a single cell in our body and go, wow, how does it know to let in what it needs and tries to block out, prevent entry to things that are harmful to it? How intelligent is that cell membrane? It's unbelievable. It has consciousness that it can make that differentiation. And the metabolism that occurs in the cell produces waste products. How does the cell know enough to eliminate that? How do we know enough to go to the bathroom? It's like, I didn't invent that. Men didn't invent that. It's designed because this power is intelligent. And because it can do this for all of us simultaneously, this ocean of creative, loving, intelligent power is available to us. You go, wow, this is great news. And so here we are, this point of consciousness in this ocean of consciousness. It's like, there are certain movements that are observable in what this creative, loving, intelligent power is trying to do. For instance, it's facilitating and seeking to provide for our growth spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. It is doing this for every living thing on the planet. It is nurturing and nourishing us if we allow it. It's healing us. Now, I've bumped into a lot of things over the course of my life. I've had bumps and bruises and cuts, a few things broken. And guess what? They heal. They heal. Not because I'm a smart guy or a good guy. They heal because they're designed that way. It's pretty impressive the way this does. This happens. I don't know about you, but protection seems very obviously to be designed into what God is trying to do for us. Divine consciousness is seeking to protect us. Sometimes, despite ourselves. When I have these kind of conversations with clients, they go, oh my God, I got some amazing stories how I was protected from death and dismemberment and disastrous situations, and it wasn't my doing. It just seems, miraculous or otherworldly. I've had several of those personally. And I think most of us, if we're a little bit aware, would recognize that, you know what? I zigged when I did. Not because I reasoned it out, I thought it through, all the pros and cons. I just did it automatically because I was protected. You know a place you can notice this that is kind of amazing when it happens? You're driving down the highway, maybe multiple lanes, and somebody off to your right or left is now drifting into your lane. They're getting too close to you, and you don't even notice it, but you react to it instantaneously. Where is that protective awareness? How is it coming to us so quickly, I think that's how we're protected. If we're aware of that and know it and trust it and are open to it, we're going to be a lot better off. People are trying to determine what God is. I heard the other day about back in the 60s, there was, I guess this is a line from a song, you know, the new Billy Joel, New York Times said, God is dead. If God were dead, so would we be. We'd all cease to exist. God is not this being. It's not a big guy, white guy with a beard up on a cloud. That's maybe taught to little children to get them to be obedient, but it's false. That is not what God is. I assume that God is this consciousness, this everywhere. If God were a being, a separate, distinct individual from you and me, how could God be everywhere? It's like, oh, is God in my liver? Well, no, because God is a separate individual. He's up on a cloud, keeping an eye on you and everyone else. Well, could my pulling your strings, that is false. That childlike thinking needs to be reevaluated. And I'll talk more about that when I get into the mental world. So if everything is consciousness, that's the raw material of all existence, what we do, and I'm talking about looking at the papers and pens and telephones and art on the wall and the computer screen and the various things around me, is consciousness shaped by the thinking of men, slowed down so it can be molded into various objects for our convenience, for our fulfillment of need. Which, when you look at it, it's like, oh, the fulfillment of need. That seems to be what the divine is trying to do as well. Fulfill our needs, not just heal us and protect us and help us grow and nurture and nourish, but to fulfill our needs. Ah, I don't know about you, but I like to work. Sometimes too much so. But working is a game of playing, and I'll talk more about that when we deal with the career world. But this game that we play is work. Now, you turn around and turn on the television, watch a basketball game or a baseball game or a tennis match or a soap opera or a movie. Everybody in there is playing at work. That's how they make their money. That's their career. And so you go, this is cool. This is cool. We are so creative, and it is learning what that really means. And it's, again, not only our right, but it's our responsibility to understand and how to do that. Some people are still stuck in the Old Testament, God is going to punish me if I think for myself, I better read one of all of these versions of the Bible that have been edited, re-edited, to translated, re-edited, edited again, and translated again. I better try to follow all of those rules, otherwise I'm going to be punished by that big man up on a cloud. People who feel that way are limited by their fear. They believe they don't have the right or responsibility to think for themselves. Makes me want to play God for a moment. You have a mind to think. I'm not going to think. I'm not going to risk thinking. No. I could do something wrong. I could think something wrong. Like, if you're given a gift and you deny the gift and you deny to use the gift, you're denying the giver. Like, that's not what we want to do. We don't want to deny the gift or the giver or its value to us. I believe that people who are going to be attracted to this idea of living to be 120 and healthy, whether 120 is the right number for them, is immaterial. Those people are like, I'm not limited by fear. I want to continue to grow. I want to grow my awareness. I want to have new thoughts. I want to upgrade my beliefs. and I'm willing to do it. I assume that this power, I'll call it divine consciousness, is only loving, doesn't seek worship, and it doesn't seek our obedience, because there are certain laws already in effect that handle all of this. We're going to learn, as our awareness grows, what feels right, what makes us healthy, happy, peaceful, and successful, and what doesn't. And then we have a choice. Okay, if I do the following, I'm going to be in pain and suffering, and I'm going to cause a lot of pain and suffering for other people. Or not. I think we should be choosing the or not. And if we're anything other than psychopaths or cavemen, we're going to choose to do things that are on what I will call the higher road. A lot of people are into this power, this big man up on a cloud, playing favorites. Oh, you're chosen. Oh, they're not chosen. He's going to punish you. No, he's not going to punish you. He's going to visit plagues on you. No, he's going to reward you. All of that stuff is a human behavior. I don't think that's how divine consciousness. Divine consciousness is an ocean. How we use it, up to our free will. So this, I'm not going to be punished. Not unless you do it to yourself. God doesn't play favorites? Nope. Nope. Made up. This power, this divine consciousness that keeps us alive, that's the source of our being, I assume is working for us, in us, and through us. Very few people will claim to have seen God. However, most of us have seen one or more people who display this unbelievable level of creative, loving, intelligent power. I've been married to a woman like that. Like, was she God? No. Was she expressing God-like characteristics? You bet. It's like, oh. So how does a person heal? I believe a person heals by allowing more God in. So it's like, oh, what's illness? A God deficiency. A divine consciousness deficiency. And why is it deficient? I think because we interfere with it. It's natural for it to occur, and it's unnatural when it doesn't. But we do what we do. I assume that there's a difference between spirituality and religiosity. If you look, oh, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. I'm religious. And you go, religion is like a business to me. It's a brand. Oh, I was raised Roman Catholic. I was raised Southern Baptist. Oh, I was raised Episcopalian. Oh, I was raised Jewish. Okay. Those are brand names of belief systems that are essentially made up. Oh. And you decided to be in that group, that community, in that belief system. And oftentimes, people brought up in that are afraid to leave it for fear of punishment, going to hell, and so on. I think we can get over that. We can have a relationship with this creative, loving, intelligent power without an intermediary. Sometimes it's helpful to have a guide, but the real deal is you and it. You and this creative, loving, intelligent power. It wants to work for you, in you, and through you. And I assume most of us, if we understood that, would go, oh, I would like that myself. And the more I can do that, the better I'm going to be. When you think in terms of consciousness, it seems this is how it unfolds. This is my assumption. That there's universal consciousness in which everything was unformed. And then when it became formed, it became divine consciousness. That's the God I'm speaking about. Although universal consciousness could be that as well. So this divine consciousness is the stuff that you and I shape with our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. Now, if you look at how some human beings behave, you'd go, man, oh man, that is not any relationship to divine consciousness. Yeah, because we shape it according to our level of awareness. And we do things in order to meet our needs, and we act in our own self-interest according to our levels of awareness. So if you see somebody stealing a purse on a city street, that person is trying to satisfy their needs. They are operating in their own self-interest according to their level of awareness. That's how they acquire energy. They don't have a frame of reference that says they could give value in exchange for money. More about that when we talk about money and finances and career. But you look around and go, okay, I have a human consciousness and I've got divine consciousness. And the more I try to relate to and connect to and reach out to and thought and feeling to divine consciousness, the more I can elevate my consciousness. And then I'm going to be healthier, happier, more peaceful, more successful, certainly more loving to myself and to other people. That's what I believe we ought to be doing. That's my assumption. When you look at the religions and people who are preaching and teaching, you go, man, oh man, that seems like a lot of human consciousness and ego consciousness in action, because they're preaching fear, not love. They're preaching wrong and rejecting about others, and they're talking about being punished by God. It's like, yep. Religion is human consciousness and ego consciousness in action. It is how it is marketed and how they control the congregations. It's how people herd people into church, into their denomination, and into donating money. It's like, ah. So let's back up and say, I assume that aligning with this source, I'm calling divine consciousness, you can call whatever you want, is actually doable. That's what this is all about, aligning with this source. If it is moving energy in terms of growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, our survival, they're using rhythm, highs and lows. It's not all showing up instantaneously when we have a thought or a feeling. And it's governed by the law of cause and effect. And I like that. I like that because it seems like now I know what the rules are of spiritual life. I know what the rules of life are, and now I can play the game much more effectively. This is reasonable, and it is kind and loving that the playing field would be set up like this, where we can actually understand and grow in our level of understanding and make all of this work to our benefit. I assume the following is true. Everything is electromagnetic. You are electromagnetic. I am electromagnetic. The sun, the moon, the earth, every object on every planet, including Earth, is electromagnetic in nature. You go, okay, that's cool. Electromagnetic. I like the idea that women tend to be more magnetic and men tend to be more electro. So now I turn around and go, men are electromagnetic and women tend to be electromagnetic. And I substantiate that with this point of view. When a man plants a seed in a woman, and that seed is going to come to physical manifestation in the form of a baby, the woman magnetically will draw everything necessary to her and to it in order to grow that seed into a full-term baby. It's like, draws it to it, draws it to it, draws it to it, draws it to it. It's like, yeah. When we start to understand these assumptions and prove them for ourselves, whether they're valid or not, and come up with others that we can discuss and develop, I think our ability to live to be 120 and healthy just got improved. And that is the nature of growing to be 120 and healthy. And that is the purpose of me talking about my assumptions, so as to trigger those in yourself, have you validate the ones I'm talking about or not, and add your own for all of our benefit. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. This is an excellent prayer in and of itself, but I have modified it with the idea that I take into consideration how blessed I am to have had Marianne in my life. Marianne is, I will say, remarkable, but beyond belief. And I am beyond grateful for that. I consider her to be the truest manifestation of love that I've ever experienced in my life, and consequently, I include her. Father, Mother, Life, Marianne, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. One of those inspirations is live to be 120 and healthy. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves, our lives, our family, and our friends into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.